There was a lady, 3 months ago, we were having an evangelistic event in a bar in Sofia. Our church is hosting an evangelistic event and we use a bar because we think it's cool. and people love to come to a bar and talk about, you know, important things in life. And after my lecture, which was on meaning, she said, it was a good lecture, but I have one objection, and this is what she said. We can't put God in human categories because they're very limited. Such an interesting statement. I think this was the first time that I heard actually this exact phrasing. So we can't put God in human categories because they're very limited. And this is a discussion icon, so this is a discussion time. Is there persuasion here? Is there an argument here? And how does that work? Now the floor is yours. Please, what do you think about this statement? Yeah, so there is persuasion attempt here. Okay, so she's trying to change my mind. Okay, so there is a persuasion. Okay, is there an argument here? Do you see an argument? How do you know there's an argument? The word because. Very good. So this is a very important word. Okay, so when you hear because, in your head, there needs to be a red light saying argument. Okay. There is something going on here. Very good. So, and how does that work? Can you you started trying to analyze it, but how? We will go there. We will go there. It for us the problem with this, it's she is speaking about God in human categories. This is what I pushed. She didn't like it, she left. But that's a completely different story. This was not my goal, okay? So this is what I call, and this example perfectly illustrates what I call the hidden weapon of persuasion, which is another fancy phrase for what in logic is called enthymeme. And this is now I'll quote Aristotle himself. Peter is like, yes, come on. This is what he says in his rhetorics. Everyone who persuades by proof, in fact, uses either enthymeme or examples. There is no other way. Enthymemes are the substance of persuasion. Now, this is very so. This is a tech talk. Let me put it. It's a talk about a specific rhetorical tool that happens to be one of the two sharpest tools, sharpest arrows in our arsenal. Okay. So if we understand how this works, we understand a lot of day-to-day, I would say daily, but not daily like only conversational, but even media, movies, pop culture type of persuasion that is very, very powerful, extremely powerful. Probably next year I can speak about examples and then I know I've done my part in terms of persuasion, okay? So the long and tedious the definition. Enthymeme is a syllogism, a three-part deductive argument with an unstated premise or conclusion, just like Peter said. Okay, so there is something hidden about this technique. This is why it is very powerful, because the audience sort of completes it by ourselves. This is why it's powerful. Now, just very quickly, how syllogisms work. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. This is the most famous example. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. Premise one. So we have two premises, just like Peter said. Premise one, all men are mortal. Premise two, Socrates is a man. Therefore, conclusion, he is mortal. So this is a typical syllogism, okay? In everyday language, however, nobody would say Socrates is mortal because he is a man and all men are mortal. Now, these words are very important. You see the word because. This indicates conclusion. The word and indicates connection between premises. So in everyday language, when you hear the word because, your logical radar should say, oh, conclusions. Something related to conclusions. And when you hear the word and, these are the connections. And now you see how this works, because enthymeme is actually hiding. And you can hide each one and still have a very effective argument. in terms of persuasion. Okay, very persuasive. First, I'm hiding premise one. Formulate the argument. You do it. Peter, you're last to speak. I'm hiding premise one. Formulate the argument. Very good. Yeah. Socrates is mortal because he's a man. Okay, so this is a statement we would hear every day. This is this because that. It's a daily act, but you need to understand this is a hidden argument. Okay, there is a hidden part to it. And it's very powerful because in your head, you finish the argument, you add the missing premise, and you say, yeah, of course. But it was never said. So this is actually a very persuasive and very powerful technique. Okay, exercise number two. Go now. Of course, yeah. So you can do that with both premises. Okay, and what about now? Or vice versa. Socrates is just a man and all men are mortal. And everybody's like, yeah. And you go away, sad. Why? Because you finished the argument in your head. This is how antonyms work. It's very, very simple. However, when it comes to our topics, apologetics, this is what you would encounter in your apologetic work, almost 100%. There will very rarely be someone who goes and says, this is my full argument. It will never happen. Okay? And we, in our podcast experiment, we do that with you all the time. All the time. This is why I'm revealing our secrets now, so that we can help you prepare a little bit more. We do that all the time. And we will have a practical exercise at the end of this session so that you can play around with these ideas. The antonym is a syllogism whose function is rhetorical persuasion. So it is designed to persuade. Why? Because its successful construction is accomplished through the joint efforts of speaker and audience, and this is its essential character. I am saying this in such a way, or for the trying to make you finish the argument yourself, which will be more persuasive than if I say it. This is why I'm using it. This is why it's designed. Because then you agree with me automatically. Okay? And it's a very dangerous thing. Yeah. It's a fantastic thing you can use as an apologist, but it's a very dangerous thing in a podcast with an atheist and a spiritual, you know. How do you call the other host atheist, and how do you call them? Cool. Okay, so the atheist and the cool one. Yeah, I said that. Extremely powerful because they let listeners and readers co-design the argument. Complete your thought. Now, what's going on here? We can't put God in human categories because they're very limited. Is there persuasion? Is there an argument? How does it work? Let us see. Let's dissect it. In everyday language, this is what it said. We can't put God in human categories because they are very limited. Now try and build the argument yourself. Lay out the premises and the conclusion, please, for me, as advanced apologists. Okay, human categories are very limited. This is what, a conclusion or a premise? Okay, it is one premise, okay. Okay, we lack what? One premise. Okay, we lack one premise. Okay, this is already indicated by the word because. If there was and instead of because, we have the two premises, we lack a conclusion. But if we have the word because, we are lacking a premise. This is obvious from the very structure of the language now. Okay, very good. Yeah, this is how you dissect antonyms. Okay, so the conclusion is we can't put God in human categories. Human categories are very limited.
God is not human.
God is limitless, endless, transcendent. Therefore, he cannot fit, he cannot be put into human categories. This is the argument. But this is taken for granted. Mm-hmm. It is supposed to be taken for granted by the audience. I'm not saying this argument is valid, logical argument. I am saying that this is what she's doing to me.
Yeah.
Okay? This is completely different. This is a completely different conversation. I'm not saying this is a correct, a valid argument, because it's trying to be a deductive argument, and it is impossible to be a deductive. It should be an inductive argument in order to be valid. But this is not what we're discussing. We are discussing that this is how she's trying to persuade me. Okay? So she's taking a statement about God that is correct. Okay? Because this is correct. God is limitless. And she's making me take this for granted. This is how I'm completing the argument. And then she just sort of uses P1 and the conclusion. And it's actually very powerful. And I tried this on some of the people that we do, that I train on apologetics in my church. And there are some advanced people in our church because we have an apologetic program that's 1 year, and there are people who've been doing this for a while, and that we have all sorts of interactions and simulations. And they were like, it tripped some of them. It tripped without revealing the full argument. I just gave them this. And I was like, this is what? And they're like, it is actually very powerful. I'm like, really? It's very persuasive. See? If you don't dissect it, if you don't sort of take the missing premise or the hidden premise out in the world to be seen, it is very persuasive at first sight. We do this with my fellow atheist, day 4, all the time. This is how we kick your butts. This is how we do it. We keep things hidden, hidden premises or hidden conclusions. We work with assumptions. And this is how we win. So I'm sort of giving you a weapon against us. Yes, exactly. Absolutely, Chris. I agree. This is why I'm talking about persuasion and not the logic of the building. This is why I'm trying to say that, and especially when the hidden premise is actually the one that's true. Because then you sort of agree automatically with the hidden premise by completing, when you complete the sentence, the argument in your head, and you're like, yeah, God is limitless. And to this I agree. And then it's so easy for someone who's not trained, and even for, as I said, trained people, because I trained my people in this type of stuff, and they're like, oh, yeah, but God is limitless. And then it takes a little bit of time for them to be like, okay, this premise is valid. What about the others? Because then you're like, okay, this one is true, but does it really follow that this is that? So you have to sort of be able to work with the argument. But in a day-to-day situation, this is very difficult to do because we are not trained to catch it. This is why it's very persuasive, because it's not visible. And it's so, this is why most Christians are crippled by arguments, arguments such as, I'll go there because there's group work. So our response, I would say, how do we deal with this, is question every part. So, human categories are very limited. Question number one, what do you mean by limited? Question number two, how do you know human categories are limited? Question number three, is the statement human categories are limited a human category? Can we then trust it? Okay, so this is the internal contradiction that we are talking about, or some of it, not all of it. So here, premise one, as soon as you see the premises and the conclusion, you can start questioning. And then it gets very difficult for them because they're just assuming stuff. But now you're like, what do you mean by limited? Can you express with your language, because language categories are language fields, you know, can you express with your language the limitness of your limited language? Because it's, yeah. So this was the first thing I did. The second thing I did is God. And my first question is, what do you mean by God? How do you know that what God is like? Because it's a statement about God. And it presupposes some knowledge about God, yeah? So she knows what God is. How does that work? Where does that knowledge come from? Limitless, endless, these are also human categories, are they not? The words themselves, because she's describing God in human categories already. This should not be possible if she is correct. Your idea of God seems very monotheistic. This is what I said to her. Exactly this one. What do we do with all religions that don't believe in God? This premise is not valid for a Buddhist, for example. For a Buddhist, this is nonsense. There is no God. It's an atheistic worldview, according to us, from our perspective. Yeah? And you can always ask questions about the conclusion. Even if human categories can't fit everything about God, how do we know that they can help us know something about Him? You also seem to speak about God in human categories, and you sound quite confident that she knows things about God. And also, if God wants people to know Him and is also all-powerful, is it possible that He chooses to reveal Himself through human categories? I asked her, how do we know things unless we use human categories? We are human. So if God wants to speak to us, He must use human categories. And this is where she was really angry. She got really angry. Which Francis Schaeffer also warned us many years ago that when you take the roof off, they might be angry. Okay, and I stepped down and she sort of left a little bit after. I was like, oh my God, I didn't want to lose the person. I did not want to win the argument. But on the other hand, sometimes you need this. In a way, it's the weird thing about this type of message. So this is how it works. This is what an antinomy is, and this is how we approach solving it or dealing with it. And of course, we can be building powerful antinomies, and we should. But this is not a talk about that. It's a talk about understanding the sort of the engineering behind it. And I really love this quote by John Neville Keynes. There is this fantastic book, Studies and Exercises in Formal Logic. I understand about 20% of it, to be honest. I'm not a very strong logician. This has never been my forte. But he says something fantastic. Yeah, fallacious arguments are seldom completely stated. Or their want of, cogency? Cogency would be more quickly recognized. To put it simply, if you hear an antinomy, someone disguising something, wanting you to take something for granted, state the full argument and then question every part. And it's usually game over, most of the time. Okay, so this is how it works.